Hey guys, how's it going? Can you hear me?
Yep, good morning.
Hey, good morning. I see Clint, Charlie, Travis, Caleb. Fantastic. How's it going, everybody?
It's marvelous. Beautiful day outside, and college football's back.
Absolutely, right? I know that's right. Whereabouts are you?
I'm in Houston, Texas.
Houston? Okay, very good. Oh, so you're in enemy territory today.
Yeah, this is more important probably to me than you guys.
I know how that works. I had a coworker that his family was, from Louisiana, and so he'd always say, obviously we want to beat LSU, but he said, man, I need us to beat LSU. So I know how that
That's
Dave,
true.
this is Caleb. I'm in Kennesaw, so I think I'm pretty close to you, actually.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Holy cow. Yeah, you're just down the street. I'm here in Acworth.
I'm in Scottsdale, Arizona, so I'm a long ways away from you guys.
Yeah, I was gonna say I saw the Arizona flag. I was gonna have to ask you about the Cornhusker flag too, though.
Well, yeah, so my Alabama flag's flying out in the front yard.
All right, very good.
I had two daughters. One went to Alabama, one went to Nebraska.
All right.
I know how that goes.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So, yeah, you got to represent that. I respect that.
Yeah. I'm a Minnesota Gopher, so I got a Gopher flag hanging in the garage somewhere too.
Okay. Okay.
But we
Fantastic.
haven't been relevant since the 30s. I think we're the last team to three-peat.
Yeah. Yeah.
30, 31, and 32 or something like that.
Alabama did not fare well the last time we played Minnesota. So I have what was it, Lawrence Maroney and I can't remember the other running back, but man, they ran roughshod over us. That was the Mike DuBose game in Nashville. Was that,
Game.
am I thinking the right game? It was crappy weather, and he did not prepare the team until they got to Nashville, and the weather was so bad they couldn't practice. Is that the right game? Is that the same game?
Think so. Minnesota had quite a few good teams in the 90s and early 2000s.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Hey, looks like David, is that Ray or Rye? Might have gone on mute.
Lost him.
Yeah, he dropped off. All right. We'll give him a minute to start back on. I didn't know what sort of attendance we would get, what sort of interest in this. And so I'm glad we've got a couple of folks on here. That's cool. And I had two people indicate that they might join sort of in flight. So, we'll go from there. If they join. It's tough. It was like putting together a puzzle. Okay, so what time fits everyone's schedule? And there were a couple of days that worked for everybody, and so Saturday being one. So here we are. Doug, I think will join us. He's the Swedish correspondent. He's over in Sweden, and he's always, IMing me or messaging me or emailing me. So I call him the Swedish correspondent. But he had another meeting this morning, well, for him this afternoon, and so. So he might be able to join, and there was another fellow that had something else that might join us as well.
So he's traveling in Sweden?
No, he lives there.
Oh, does he?
He does. He's from America. I think his folks live in Florida, but he works for Volvo, and so he's been stationed over there, worked over there. I don't know how long, but quite a while. So, but yeah. Well, hey, why don't we just? I don't really have a format necessarily. I just wanted us to sort of get together and put this out there. I know last year, man, I really dropped the ball on some of the benefits last year. We were going to do sort of, calls with folks, and that never really panned out. And so I want to do something that approximated that. This year, and something that we could just schedule, put on the books, and make sure that it happened. And so, in the world of Zoom 2020, that seemed like an easy place to go. But why don't we just run around? We've been talking a little bit, but why don't we just kind of run around the horn, who we've got, where you are, and then like I said, any questions that you guys have, I probably got a couple things we can sort of spin at. But and Caleb's back. Caleb sent some questions, and I think we've got some others from the sign up. So, but Clint, why don't you sort of kick us off, and we'll just do a quick sort of round the table.
Just like an introduction.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I'm Clint Williams. I live in Houston, Texas. I grew up in Huntsville, Alabama. My dad is alumni of the Tide. I went elsewhere chasing an engineering degree that, you know, was probably better suited, but I went to Mississippi State, so I kind of like have
down the road.
Down the road, you know, went to a lot of games, but I guess my true love is Alabama. I've been watching since the infamous goal line stand against Penn State. I was 4 years old. Dad plopped me down in front of the TV, and we watched that game, and that's the first one I think I probably ever saw. Cried the day Bear Bryant died because I was only in first grade. But yeah, I've been watching ever since through the good times and the bad. And obviously I'm in hostile territory. I've been living out here in Houston since off and on since 1996. So nice. Been out here. Work for ExxonMobil. I work for XTO Energy. So I'm in the oil and gas business.
Fantastic.
Is it a good camaraderie, or do they just hate Alabama?
What, at Texas A&M?
Yeah. Well, where you live.
Where I live, it's not bad. I mean, so Texas A&M fans are notoriously courteous. I mean, they are very good sports. I think that's part of their mantra. So as far as, you know, hated fans, there's quite a bit of LSU fans here because of Katrina. I mean, when Katrina happened back in 2005, we took in like hundreds of thousands. I think we took in half of Baton Rouge. And so a lot of them stayed. And so they've just added to the population here. And there's a lot of – Houston's diverse. You can – At my work, we have everyone from Penn State, Minnesota, I mean, Big Ten, Big 12, you know, not so many Pac-12, but, you know, we have a good mix of everyone. So it's a good rivalry, you know, set up, good pools for, like, football pools and things like that. So it's good. But that's me. I love the show. I've been listening probably, I don't know, I think since 2012 or 2013. It's like, it's been years. It's been years.
All right. Cool.
And I have a question for you, but I'll wait for the end.
All right. Somebody go next.
Yeah. So I'll jump in next. So my name's Charlie Lindgren. I'm born and raised in Minnesota, and about 23 years ago, got transferred out to Scottsdale to run a bank. And, I really have always grown up as a huge college football fan. I got two daughters, and every Saturday we'd sit down and watch game day. And I really kind of got them interested in the football, but more the stories behind football. Yeah. And that really kind of connected them. And in Arizona, we only have like three real colleges. We have ASU, U of A, and then we have the one up in Flagstaff. And so for kids that want to go to college and get away from their high school groups, they really got to go out of state.
Yeah.
My oldest daughter, through the love of football, picked University of Nebraska. So she went there. And then 3 years later, because of my love for the Tide, my oldest daughter said, "Dad, let's look at University of Alabama." I'm like, "God, that's like 1,800 miles away." And I said, "You know, there's a fair amount of home cooking that goes on there. And we're from Arizona, originally from Minnesota. How do you, you know, you really want to do that thing?" And she's like, "No, let's go look at it." So we went, we looked at that. We looked at University of Michigan and University of Oregon, and she fell in love with Alabama.
Nice.
So she graduated there about 3 years ago. But I've been following Alabama remotely from Arizona for about 10 years. Been following your show, Dave, for about 6 years.
Wow.
And college football has really tied our whole family together. So now my oldest daughter's married, and she claims that her knowledge of football helped her in dating. And my oldest daughter now from Alabama, she works in D.C., and she claims the same thing. I can go out with guys, and I can school them on
you know,
this and that. So it's really bonded me and my daughters as well. So
good work, Dad.
It's been a huge part of our life, and the whole Zoom thing is kind of a little replacement for not being able to tailgate and
right
do all the other crap that, you know, you used to do. So even though this is a small crowd, I appreciate you plugging us in and connecting us, you know, from around the globe, so to speak.
Absolutely. I sort of lost my train of thought a minute ago, but Doug, the Swedish guy, he's not really Swedish, but he said, "Do it on Saturday and call it a virtual tailgate." And I was like, "Damn, sold." So My daughter's younger, you know, a lot younger than yours, but a year or so ago, we're sort of bringing her up, you know, in football as well. And so a year or so ago, we were walking around the neighborhood, and there was a neighbor that had, they had really nice landscaping and all that, and but they had these flowers that were, you know, yellow, gold, and purple. And they look, I mean, you know, it's terms of landscaping, as far as that goes, they look nice. But, and so I was like, oh, what do you think about those flowers? And one of my more prouder moments, my daughter said, those are corn dog flowers. I was like, yes.
Yeah, no, that's great.
So I was like, yeah, that's a proud moment. So, why don't, it looks like we have a couple people with a connection sort of dropping and drop, on and off. Caleb, why don't you give us an intro?
Yeah, sure. So, sorry guys, my camera's on and off cause I've got four kids under eight. So I'm kind of multitasking with laundry and walking the dog and making the bed. So don't want to be a distraction, but yeah, I live in Kennesaw. I went to the University of Alabama back in 2009 and did my bachelor's and my MBA there. So Dave, I think you did your MBA there as well. So we got that in common. But I did a kind of a data analytics focus. I'm definitely a data guy. So I always love the insights you guys provide, the detail. And I'm a data engineer at Chick-fil-A, actually, at our corporate headquarters. So it's kind of my day job. But I grew up in enemy territory as well in New Orleans. So I can absolutely empathize with your friend's sentiment of just, you know, if we go 1-11 every year, I want that one to be LSU. That is my thing. So last year was particularly painful. But yeah, just echo everyone else's thoughts. Glad that you were able to pull us together. I'm really enjoying the community so far. So fantastic. Appreciate it.
Fantastic. Looks like, Travis, you maybe have had some connection issues. Why don't you introduce while we know you're on the line?
Yeah. I have had some weird connection issues, but, can you guys hear me? Okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Yeah. When Clint and Charlie were talking, for some reason it was getting scratchy, but anyway, my name's Travis Camper. I've actually never been to the state of Alabama. I was born and raised in Central California. That's where I live now still. But I've been an Alabama fan since I was in junior high. I did my undergraduate at Cal Poly San Luis Obispo, which is more for the – I'm in agriculture. It's an ag school over here on the coast. And
I would – looks like some bandwidth issues. I don't know if you're still there, Travis.
Yeah. But definitely familiar with SLO areas. It's beautiful out there.
It really is. It's more years ago than I want it to be, but my wife and I did a trip, and we started up in Napa and then went, you know, actually we started in San Francisco, stayed there, you know, a couple of days and went up to Napa a couple of days. That is just amazing. It's like being in a different world. It's just so different. Right. And then we went down the coast. We took a couple of days going down the coast and then we stayed in San Diego. It was one of those trips that you just, you know, you're always going to remember because you do so much. And it was like 10 or 11 days, but we, you know, the couple of days riding down, PCH, was just amazing. And Central California, at least along the coast, was just amazing. We went to the Hearst Castle and, the Obispo area and just all of that stuff. It was just amazing. Yeah. So, trip that I would do that again. Some trips you want to do something different, you know, to experience. So I would do that one again.
Yeah. So where we're located, I'm in Fresno County, which we're actually the number one ag county in the country, I believe, with all the crops. And, we have a family dairy farm is what we do here.
Oh, nice.
And then, to get to San Luis Obispo and Hearst Castle is only 2 hours, or get to the mountains 2 hours. The climate is great here. The, other environments with half the state on fire and all that, it's not so great.
Yeah. But, no, that's cool.
So yeah. And I've been listening to your podcast for the last few years. Now I found it a couple of years ago and yeah, I enjoy listening to it and how you break things down and watching the tide roll as often as I can. They're supposed to be on a local CBS station today. So,
Yep. Fantastic. Well, welcome. We're glad to have you in the fold. And Brian, are you connected?
I am. I'm on my phone. I was going to jump to my computer.
Fantastic. How's it going, man? Why don't you just give us now, you're not from San Francisco. I love that picture behind you.
No, it's a fake background. So you don't want to see my office, I promise.
Very good. Very good. Well, hey, I really appreciate you guys. Like I said, I didn't know we wanted to do something bonus wise this year that was a little bit, you know, a little bit different, an opportunity to engage. You know, we've done this, you know, like some of you have mentioned, we've been doing this a while, and we did this a while, and we were just sort of on our own sort of island. We didn't have a whole lot of interaction, maybe some emails every once in a while, but the last couple of years, and I don't know really what's changed, but the last couple of years, we've had a lot more engagement, and met a couple of fans at the games, had an extra ticket last year, and gave that to one of the fans joining us, and so that has just been so much fun. And so this year we know, you know, we wanted to do something to, you know, foster more of that interaction. And so this is one of the things that we hope that do that. And, I don't want to make a big deal over this every, you know, sort of every time, but I do really want to express an appreciation for you guys supporting us. It really does help us keep the lights on here. And, you know, we really do appreciate that. So, so with that, you know, a couple of the questions that, a couple of questions I get, you know, most regularly, and I'll sort of hit some of those, you know, and you guys, if you guys aren't interested, you can just shake your head no, and we'll sort of move along, but I always get the question like, well, why did you guys start doing this? Or sort of what was the origin of this? And so it really is, it's, we've been doing it so long, right? But, it really started when, like the origin, like the way, way origin is, you know, someone, a coworker mentioned, you know, the iTunes and iPods. And I was like, no, I don't walk around listening to music all the time. And she said, no, they have, it's like all kinds of radio shows. You can listen to sports on it. And so you can almost see my eyes light up. I was like, wait a second, I can work out listening to ESPN radio shows or something. And so way back sort of circa 2008, you know, sort of got into listening to iPod or the iTunes. And so, you know, you consume the ESPN fare and stuff. And so from there, I said, there's gotta be an Alabama show, right? I mean, there just, you know, there has to be. And at the time there was maybe one or two, this was 2008, early 2009, whatever it is. And there were a couple, and you know, no judgment, but I didn't like them. it wasn't the type of conversation that I wanted to listen to. And there's a lot more now, and I'll be candid, I haven't listened to a lot more. So there's probably a lot of really good content out there now, but there wasn't then. And so, you know, you kind of file that away, like, you know, maybe one day there'll be a pretty good show. And, you know, a few weeks later, Tom and I, we've known each other for years. Tom and I were, we were at work and working at different places, but we got on the phone and we had a 45-minute conversation about, I don't know if you guys remember Robbie Green. And so as a true freshman, he came in, was really undersized at a safety, but was really productive. And then he got popped for, I don't know, marijuana or steroids or something, but he had to sit out a year. And so we were talking about the upcoming season, him coming back. And we had a 45-minute conversation about him coming back. Is he going to be ready to play? Are we, you know, he's still undersized. Is he going to play, you know, safety? Do we move him to corner? And so we just had, you know, that conversation. And so we hung up the phone, kind of got back to work. And it sort of resonated with me that that's the conversation I want to hear. And, you know, that was so fun to just sort of toy with that idea and explore it. And so I kind of ruminated over that for the next couple of weeks, whatever it was. And so, and then it just came to me as like, well, then we need to do that. Tommy and I need to be that conversation. We need to be that podcast, because it's not out there. And so that's sort of the origin, you know, for those, if you've ever, you know, listened to those early shows, they were the audio production, not that it's super duper now, but it was really bad then. And I should have pulled it out. It's like a relic. Because we didn't know what we were doing. And so we just needed audio that we could load into the computer. So I got a handheld digital microphone that had a USB connection, and we would literally, those early shows, we would have to do it together. So we'd have to, you know, I'd have to go over to his house, or he'd have to come over to mine. So it was really just a barrier to, but we would sit in front of this microphone, we would hold it, and then we'd both kind of lean into it, and from the wrong angle, it would look really weird, but we would be talking into this thing. And I remember one game, it was a Florida game in Tuscaloosa. I think it was the game that Tebow, we intercepted his jump pass. CJ Mosley had a really good game as a freshman. We drove back from Tuscaloosa to Atlanta, and we talked about the game. We talked about what we wanted to do in that show. And we literally sat in a parking lot, you know, huddled over this microphone doing the show. And so that's sort of the origin. We've gotten better. I actually have like an adult mic. I don't know if you guys can see it.
Yeah.
You know, sort of a, this is actually new this year. I've had this mic, you know, almost since then, but sort of the boom and connected to the desk and all that, that's new this year. So that's a little bit of the origin, very humble beginnings. And we still consider ourselves just two guys talking ball. But it's been a lot of fun, and we've met a lot of folks, you know, through the years, and including all of you, and we so greatly appreciate that. Another question I get is more recently is, hey, where's Tom? Which is a valid question. Sometimes I ask myself, hey, where is this dude? And so, you know, Tom and I are friends back to, we actually met in college. He's from the Mobile area, and I'm from Nashville, and we met in school there in Tuscaloosa. And, you know, we've been friends, you know, ever since. We were roommates for a number of years. We went to different graduate programs, but we both went to grad school, and we're just trying to squeeze out every extra minute in Tuscaloosa that we could get. And then, you know, turns out we both, out of school, I went to St. Louis. He went to Atlanta. And then a couple years in St. Louis, I ended up here in Atlanta. So we've been friends forever. And there's the reality of it is right now is that just with his work and family, it's just an obligation that he, you know, doesn't have as much time for. He's got three kids, all, you know, high school or below. And then with his work, he works in financial services. And so he's just, you know, incredibly busy. And so I harass him, you know, hey, let's get you on the show. Maybe we don't do a full show, but let's get you on like an Ask Tom segment or something. You know, people miss you, man. Let's get you back on. And so we're going to find a solution. Tom isn't gone. I haven't kicked him out. He'll be back. It's just one of those things. We go through seasons in life where we have to prune sometimes, and that's where he's at. So we'll get him back. And I'll stop talking. You guys probably want to talk amongst yourselves and have questions, and I'll stop talking, and we'll kind of open it up to whatever you guys want to cover.
Yeah, I was just missing Nick. He used to give you a hard time sometimes. That's what I would always get stuck on. You guys would give each other a hard time.
Yep. There was a time when we, not only when we were roommates in college, but there was a time where we were roommates in Atlanta as well. And his girlfriend, his wife, you know, for a little bit, it was the three of us kind of living together. So it was, you know, definitely a third wheel is the role that I played. But there were times where she thought that we were about to throw fists. You know, she said, "You guys are so mad at each other. Y'all need to sort of separate." And we would both look at her like, "What do you mean mad? we're just having an impassioned conversation." And I think for the first little bit, she was a little bit sort of, you know, unnerved, but, it's just a function of, I guess how we talk. And so, yeah, some of it, so it's actually a little bit dialed down in the podcast, but yeah, we give each other our time, and it's just the nature of it. But, absolutely.
So I got two questions. So the first one is one of the reasons that I find your podcast so interesting is you have such a way of words and of explaining things, and, you know, you kind of go, I don't know, some of the phrases, you know, one's not dissimilar as the other or something. You kind of got a real craft with describing things, and, you know, Tom can be very emotional, and he'll say something, and then you'll kind of craft words, and you'll kind of take what he says and spin it around into a, you know, kind of how you see things. Right. And so I don't want to know what you do for a living, but do you use that communication or language as part of your job, or is that just something that's, you know, you've always been good at?
That's a great question. And I don't know exactly how to answer that. I have, so I work, out of school, I did management consulting. And so traveled working with different clients, sort of project oriented, it's Accenture, out of school. It was sort of back in the day, it was Anderson Consulting. So I did that.
Let me interrupt though. So yeah. It's also the ability to observe things and then craft it in words. For example, your podcast on the Missouri game, how Alabama went right down the middle, right after their gut. I mean, so that's observing it, but then all your language and how you use to explain it is really just kind of unique and refreshing. So, go on with what I was trying to ask.
No. That's awesome. And so I don't know. I don't know that I have a super good answer, but you know, most of my career and even today, right. And so I did that for a number of years, and then I work in the health industry, but in more of the IT, and I still do implementation and it's project management work. So it's a lot of client facing work. And so, you know, you have to be thoughtful and sometimes in how you say things. I have always had people, I say always, over the last 10 or 12, 15 years, I've had people just, you know, comment like, that's a different way that you said that, or the phrases that you use are different and unique. And I don't think about it. It just comes out. Yeah. and fortunately so far that hasn't got me in trouble, but it's interesting that you notice that. I appreciate it. And I wish I could bottle it up because I could probably get better at it, but that's definitely interesting. I do try, with Tommy, I do try to, one intention is when he takes a position that's completely opposite, you know, of mine, I try to find what is that middle ground. And so and I'm not trying to trick him with the wording necessarily, but you know, if we look at it just a little bit different, then can we agree on this point? And sometimes we could. We had a lot of those conversations sort of in the Blake Sims era. Yeah. He did not like Blake Sims, but by the end of the season, I got him to say, man, I wish Blake was coming back next year. So for me, that was a win.
Yeah, that's a good example. So the second question is, what do you do during the week? What kind of recon? Where do you get your information and how do you gather all the details? Because you guys seem to know so much about recruits, about what's happening during the week. And I mean, where do you get all that information? What kind of content do you mind to get that information?
I read a lot of articles. And so I have, I don't know how many, 8 or 9, you know, websites that follow Alabama, and I'll read their stuff. And I probably had this thought last night. Do I read their stuff and do I just regurgitate their stuff back? Or is that just the raw material that I use to sort of form my own opinion? And sometimes it might be a little bit of both. I like to think it's all my opinion. But I take in a lot of that. What I find, if you guys do that as well, what I find though, is if you listen to the interviews, the coach interviews and the player interviews, and it took me longer to realize this than I should admit, but all of the articles are just stuff from the interview. And so if you listen to the interview and really sort of digest what the players are saying and the coach is saying, then all of the articles are just sort of, you know, scaffolding, you know, on to the interview. And so in terms of the prep, it is a lot. I do read a lot of the articles, or at least skim them, try to listen to the interviews. What I'm finding is the prep for these other teams takes a lot of work. I probably read 30 Missouri articles, and I don't have time to read 30 articles for every team, but about a halfway through that, I started to really get a sense for, you know, how they felt about their team, and maybe that sort of showed in the interview. I don't know. I'm open to all that feedback, but that's, I don't know. That's a long-winded answer to your question. Yeah. I just, you know, watch the games. I like to watch them twice you'd be surprised how much I just watch them once. But I put a lot, I sort of characterize that I'm a, like almost like a method actor, that I have to do all of that work. Tommy can watch half the football game and have that same level of conversation. So he, I don't know, like if he's got six eyes that he's, you know, sort of digesting the play, because he can watch a lot more of, a lot less of the action and carry on the conversation like he had done as much. And so I hate him for that.
Yeah, that's cool. Well, thanks for the two answers.
Yeah, absolutely.
I was saying, in the Missouri game, I felt like the first guy on the podcast, I felt like you knew Missouri better than he did.
Yeah.
So I felt like you were kind of guiding the conversation for him, and kind of helping him out and kind of saying, oh, yeah, I heard this. You know, so you can tell that you really do your research, because it's, I mean, it's definitely, it's just changed the way I look at football as a whole. And so I'm just grateful for both of y'all, because just the way that I see football, and I didn't play football in high school or anything like that, so maybe that's part of it. But, you know, I'm just super grateful because, you know, the things y'all observe and it's causing me to observe when I watch football has really changed my experience and just made it that much better. And it's really exciting to hear y'all talk and then see stuff take place in the game. It's like, oh, I know who this person is, or, oh, I know about this play because I listened to the podcast. And so I just, I'm grateful for that.
Yeah, that is, I echo that, because all of a sudden watch for a pulling guard or how the, you know, the tight end blocks it. I'm like not watching where the quarterback or the ball is. I'm watching something you guys might have drawn out in the prior podcast. So, no, I echo that. That's funny you say that.
That is.
Yeah. I don't know how y'all make like a Georgia Southern 42-0 game so interesting, but because you've talked about like the third string nickelback, I'm like, all right, is DeMarco Helms coming in? No, he was right. They said it'd be Eddie Smith. Or, I mean, y'all just have a way to make the entire game interesting.
That's awesome.
Man, on a side note, my wife is a Georgia Southern alumni, and we were actually living in Statesboro when that game took place.
Wow. There you go. That's probably a bad example. That was the 10 horn, but you get the idea. Chattanooga, you know, Sisters of Mercy State, whatever.
Right. Right.
Well, and not worked for actually University of Tennessee at Chattanooga now. So.
He's
but, hey, both of those.
Darn it.
Are,
you know what I'm trying to say?
No, you're good. I'm just telling you that, yeah, no, I completely get it. And Georgia Southern, I will, you know, not that they were years ago, but they're so funny because they look at the Alabama game. Well, they really looked at the Florida game that they won. And they think that they should be a top 10 team every year. And I just have to laugh at them. I'm like, mm-hmm. You have no. Or they beat App State 1 year and they think they should be in the top 10 because App State was ranked 22, so therefore they should be in the top 10.
Right.
It is what it is.
Yeah. Well, Brian, you got a nemesis here. He's coming after you everywhere.
An unintentional nemesis.
It's all good.
You're good, Caleb. You're good, I promise.
It's all good.
So I get where UTC is. I went to one game since I started working there about 3 years ago. I went to one game, and that's about all I could handle. So.
Yeah. So are you in the Chattanooga area?
I am. We live just in Georgia, but I work for UT, and it's a great school and great people. And I mean, I love the school itself and I love Georgia Southern, but
yeah,
but their football team could definitely develop some more.
Yeah. That's a beautiful area, that Chattanooga area, the mountains and the river. And that's really incredible. We have a client, I didn't do the project, but I went up there to sort of represent some of our capability. with Blue Cross Blue Shield Tennessee, and they're up on kind of on that hill and sort of that glass structure. It's really incredible, and so we stayed just right. And I had not been in downtown Chattanooga since I was a kid, right? When we went to Chattanooga Choo Choo as a kid, and so we stayed at that. I don't know. There was a Courtyard or some Marriott, you know, sort of right downtown, mm-hmm. And there was just all the activities and walking distance and the Natural Museum and the Children's Museum and the restaurants and the bars. I was like, man, we're just here right here in Atlanta. I need to take my wife up for a weekend in Chattanooga because that's pretty darn cool. Yeah. And we haven't done that yet, but it's a beautiful area.
Yeah, it's a great place to see like waterfalls and go hiking and stuff like that. I mean, I know some people are way out in California and have beautiful things to see there too. But if you're ever on the towards the East Coast, Chattanooga's a great small town that's got a lot of beauty, especially if you like the outdoors.
Yeah, it's not a place that you would, you know, pull out the map and look for, but but go, right? It's definitely, and then just sort of the whole surrounding region, you know, the way the river meanders, and then you get into sort of the western North Carolina is really pretty in the mountains. It's, you could get lost in, like, literally, but you could get lost in just the beauty of it. It really is pretty incredible.
Yeah, great whitewater rafting too nearby.
Yep, absolutely. Akoi, I've done that a couple times. That's nice. I want to circle back. You guys, and a couple of you said it, and I just want to acknowledge one of the great, and I don't say this bragging at all. We've gotten, you know, it's a comment that we get, you know, every so often when you guys, you know, comment that, you know, we learn something about the game, listen to you guys, or it helps us, you know, sort of watch or enjoy. That is like, I want to tear up. That is the most flattering. That is absolutely the most flattering feedback that we can get, because I still feel like I don't know the game, or I still feel like, you know, what are they going to do? You know, you get like really technical, you know, what are we going to do to counter sort of XYZ? And I don't always know. And so we try to, you know, figure it out and watch and learn and stuff like that. But it really is. And I go to do some of the shows and I'm like, man, I'm just a fraud because I don't know what I want to say about this and how do I want to describe it. So we really do appreciate that you guys listen and take something from it. We really do appreciate it. I did a poor job of sort of watching the clock. I think we're close to our 40 minutes. And so if this drops, then sorry, we didn't have a formal ending, but we're using the free version of the Zoom, and it may warn us or it may kick us off. So I don't know, sort of heads up on that, but we'll go until it does. Caleb, you sent over, emailed a couple of questions this morning. And so you were talking about the defensive line rotation that looked like a short rotation against Mississippi or against Missouri. And then you're talking about a package with no down linemen and looked like 4 or 5 linebackers. And so just a couple, you know, sort of quick thoughts on that. I did go back and look. And so, you know, LeBrian Ray, DJ Dale, and Iboibi started. And we did see Byron Young play some, not a whole lot, but he you know, saw him get some reps in. And if Phil, he seemed to be all over the camera. And so it did seem like it was a shorter bench. I think that instantly gets better when Christian Barmore comes back. I think he's going to have a big day today. I think he is, it's a terrible analogy, I guess, but you know, if you're cooking and something is like, hey, it's pretty good, but just that extra spice that really makes it pop. I think Christian Barmore is going to be that across the defensive front. That little extra, and it doesn't take a lot to have sort of a ripple effect or magnifier effect. You know, the guy at the end of the line is going to play better if there's just a little bit more push in the middle. And I think Barmore is going to bring that. I do think we see some Tim Smith. I think he's going to earn a spot in the rotation. So I think it was a shorter rotation Saturday, but some of these things are going to trend over. And that's almost a point I wanted to make in the Missouri podcast, is let's not draw conclusions off of one game, because Saban's coaching a season. And so all the stuff that we're excited to see, we're not going to see in week one. It's going to unfold. It's pages turning in a book. And so we're going to start to see that. You know, we're going to start to see some of that today, and then we'll start to see some of that as we continue forward. But Barmore, watch out for him. And then you mentioned, and this is a good observation because I did not see this in real time, but I saw someone commented on Tighter Insider, and he had put together like a full series of spreadsheets around the alignments and the number of snaps. And I just sort of got lost in that. I was like, oh man, I want to retire so I have time to be able to do this, because that, it was just fascinating. And that was just one game, and he talked about the number of snaps with different formations, and he had noticed that. And so it's a formation with no defensive linemen, but and I forget the counts, but I think it was either with a nickel or a dime, and so your linebacker count's gonna, you know, vary accordingly. And he called it a ghost package, which I thought was a pretty cool name. And he said, that's not official. That's not a Saban name, like the Rabbit Rusher or something. He says, that's just what I'm calling it. But I thought that was pretty fascinating. I think we ran it only a couple times against Missouri. I want to go back and sort of watch that film, or I want to watch for that alignment. I don't have an opinion over it other than it starts to feel more like an amoeba defense where you can be a lot more versatile. You know,
what do you mean, Dave? Do you mean like it's just all linebackers playing the defensive lineman positions?
It is. It is. Oh. And so, yeah. Yeah. So there's no, and what's interesting is for me, that's something you really have to watch for, right? Because we will have personnel alignments, like scheme alignments, that will look the same, but you have to look at the personnel grouping to recognize what really are we doing. You know, we'll run a nickel, but you know, so we'll run, you know, Saban says a 3-4. We never run a 3-4, it's a 3-3-5, right? But we'll walk up a strong safety into a linebacker position, and if you're just watching, it'll look like a 3-4. We will take the outside linebacker and walk him up to the line of scrimmage, and it'll look like a 4-3, but it's really a nickel, because you know the defensive end is a linebacker personnel wise, and the outside linebacker is a safety. So the personnel grouping is a nickel, but the alignment, the scheme on the field looks more like a traditional 4-3, and so that's where we get some of the versatility. And so when we line up, it'll look like, you know, a 3-4 or a 4-3, but the linemen are all linebackers. So Caleb, that was a really good sort of find. I didn't see that sort of in game, but I saw someone commenting on it. And so that's absolutely something that I'm going to watch for this week. And I will complain about this, and you know, until later in the season. It's so much harder to see this stuff on TV. I love going to the games live, so you can, you know, I will literally, if you see me in the game, I literally am counting out the defensive backs, and you know, not only who, but how many and where they position, and then you sort of work my way forward on defense. And on TV, that's so much harder because you can't see the back end. Are we in a nickel or dime? Damn it, I can't tell because move the camera, pan the camera. I can't see what's going on back there, but. And so I'll do that. But there's some things you get to see on TV that, you know, that you can't see live in the replays and some of the commentary. So it's good and bad, but, early in the season, I like to see because you can count. And then if you've seen it with your own eyes live, then you can sort of, your mind sort of fills in those blanks, from the TV. So I'd rather always start with live and then watch TV, but this season's weird.
Hey, Charlie, when you were making that comment earlier, was it in reference to like when he just said a few minutes ago, pages turning in a book?
Yeah, there's been a few little drops the way I say it. And I don't want to like put you off your game and have you think about too much, but it's good. You got a good way. But what do you think about like Tim Smith watching the Missouri game? If you took his number off, does he remind you of anyone in the past? He just looks so exciting.
Yeah. Are you thinking Daron Payne?
Yeah, I don't know. I couldn't think of it. That's why I was asking. But you know, a couple times he was in the backfield like lickety split. Holy crap.
Yeah. Are you talking Tim Smith or Will Anderson?
I'm sorry, yeah, Will Anderson Jr. Yeah. I'm sorry.
No, that's good.
No, I'm sorry, yeah.
So Will Anderson was like a cannon shot.
Holy shit. But does he remind you of anyone?
Well, people comment Derek Thomas. And, that's almost rarefied air. So I want to be careful.
Until the third game, right?
Let's pump the brakes.
Yeah, pump the brakes.
Yeah, I was. You know, someone on Twitter was talking about that. And I said, man, if he is half of Derek Thomas, we're in good shape. So,
there was one early play in the Missouri game where he chased the quarterback like out to the side. The quarterback pitched it, and then I forget who was that right there. So he did like exactly what he should have done. The linebacker did exactly what. And you know, fast forward to the middle of last year. You know, that guy would have got around the end and broke for 8 yards or something like that. So that first early play, I was like, damn, this is going to be fun.
Yeah, it's a tone setter, right? Because the defense, You know, because he did come in and blew up the pitch guy. Like, holy cow. Normally, yeah. If you think like, oh, I'm getting the fake, I'm not going to get hit. Man, he got clubbed. Yeah. And like it to such a degree that everyone took notice, like, dude's a headhunter over here, so we need to watch out. But it was so fast, it was so abrupt that it really just disrupted the quarterback, you know, as he was continuing, you know, to run his play. And then I think it was Dylan Moses who made the play. And I was like, man, that's the linebacker play we've been missing. It was the perfect play to sort of encapsulate what we've been hungry for, what we've been waiting for. Last year, the linebacker play wasn't there. And to get it so early and so explosive in that game was like, that was just water in an oasis or something. That was just magical.
Well, there's another play where he blew up the quarterback right in the before handing off the ball.
Yeah.
And that, I mean, if you're the QB, you're like, damn, who's watching this guy?
Right. I should at least be able to take a step back. I should have some time.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's a cannon shot. He's going to be fun one to watch.
Yeah, not only – so, Charlie, I think not only did he disrupt – I mean, so he disrupted what the Missouri coaches wanted to do very early in the game. They wanted to establish, you know, some misdirection with some option play, which typically is difficult for teams to diagnose and to react to, especially, like, first-year outside linebackers.
Yeah.
But he came in and reacted absolutely professionally to that. He hit his man. He played his role. And – the coaches are like, well, got to move on to something else. Can't do that anymore.
Well, you think the RPO game, we're going to read this true freshman. We're going to read him, and we're going to make some hay reading this guy. And it turns out, nope.
Try something else.
Something else.
One question I had for you, Dave, is Ty Pirine. You know, we didn't start him, and I think I think maybe the podcast got too long, and maybe you didn't get around to it, but I really was very confused not to see him out there. And then to have what was replaced with is a guy that can't break 40 yards on the average.
Yeah. So very surprised by that. I thought, I thought we would have, you think of, you know, because Sam Johnson's a true freshman, a walk-on true freshman. Right. And so I would have thought, let's travel, you know, first game of the season, all this, let's travel the guy that's traveled before because, you know, it's familiar. And so I was very, very surprised. One of the things, and to me it was telling in Saban's interview, he was picking on Ty, and he said, I'd rather have a guy that can kick it, you know, 39 yards in the air that we can cover versus a guy that kicks, you know, a line drive 50 yards that we can't cover. And so one of the themes that, you know, you've heard us talk about, you know, probably for a while is Saban likes to set his floor. And, like, the ceiling is great. Let's have a high ceiling. But if I know what the floor is, then I can build. I can build around that. And so if I have a guy that's going to boom at 50 yards, but I don't know if we can cover it, then that's unstable. If I have a guy that can boot it for 39 yards methodically, like clockwork, it's going to go up in the air, it's going to have the hang time, and we can go down and cover it, then that's what I want. Because it's predictable. I can build around that. So that's what I think we're seeing.
Yeah, I agree. And so I was thinking along the lines of, you know, he had that mishandled snap late in the year last year. Yeah. It was a very important mishandled snap. And I was thinking maybe in my head, maybe he's got that in his brain. Because I do agree with, you know, Saban's logic to some degree. If the game doesn't matter and you're not in a field position perspective, but if you get into a field position game, the 39-yard guy, I mean, I think you're taking more of a risk by putting him in than trying – because we've got the fair catch rule now, and a lot of people more often than not take it. And, you know, that 50-yard line drive isn't so painful as it used to be. And,
I think you're right. I think you're right. I think it's going to be something to watch, right? Because part of, you know, sort of the roster management aspect of it, you can only travel so many people, you know, to and away. And so we took three. We took a punter, the kicker, and then the kickoff guy, two of which were true freshman walk-ons, which is kind of interesting. But I think three is the right number if you have, you know, two guys, if you have sort of a built-in backup. So, you know, Reichert can kick off and Reichert can punt. And so let's, you know, and then we need somebody that can back up, you know, Reichert on the kick. And so as long as it's sort of overlapping, I think three is the right number. What's going to be interesting is in Tuscaloosa, when we don't have that restriction, what do we see? And do we see Ty today? I think we do. And I think we'll get a more representative picture of what's in Saban's head when he literally can go to the shelf and pick off anything he wants. When he has to go to his suitcase and it's a smaller sort of travel kit, you know, I think the strategy of the roster is a little bit different.
Yeah, you agree?
I don't know. That's my theory anyway.
Well, what do you guys think about Smitty playing on the kickoff or the punt team? Like, he was down there on a couple.
I hate it. Yeah. I hate Waddle. I hate Waddle returning kicks. I hate Smith. I just don't. I was going to bring that up. I feel like the kick return position to me is just custom made for like a fourth string running back. Like, why is Jace McClellan not back there? He's not critical to the success of the offense necessarily, but he has the speed. He's got kind of the build to take some of the violence. You know, I'm with you. I don't understand it.
And it gives him game time experience.
Yep.
Yeah. In a way, exactly.
It's attractive, right?
Yeah, you guys. Yeah,
I know what his logic is. His logic is you put your best people on the field. Most of, I got it. I get it.
And yeah, I do too. I understand that, but maybe that was a statement that he was making because he had Jalen and as a gunner on, you know, coverage. If you want to put Jalen back there returning punts, then I can give you that. I don't like it on kickoffs. Especially kickoffs, because let it go into the end zone, get it on the 25. They're going to give you 25. They give you a 25% discount on the length of the field, and they give it to you. So, now you got me wound up.
Are you passionate about that, Dave? I've never heard you talk about that before.
I hate when, and we've seen players, you know, holy cow, how did they get 100 yards return? Because they ran it out to the 25 times. What they don't count is the yards they lose because we didn't get out to the 25. And so that's annoying that we stat it that way. I wish they would stat it, you know, more correctly. I don't like those two guys on special teams other than Waddle returning punts. I can live with that. The rest of it I do not like. And I absolutely dislike – for me, it's I don't know, maybe I'm nuts, but for me, it's a little bit about body types, and it's a little bit about, you know, who is the feature, the star wide receiver. And so I think the body type that Jalen Waddle has, I'm okay with him running an end around. The body type of Devonta Smith, I am not okay with that.
Yeah, I agree.
That's just not what he should do. And I thought the same about Calvin Ridley. And then when you think about Julio and somebody like Amari, they are too valuable to be an end around guy. Let's find a little water bug that can run an end around, and that's included in the offense. I'm okay with that, but let's not take your premier star must have receiver and run an end around with them. Stop me if you've heard me say that before.
The only thing I think back to on kickoffs is, and we're all going to remember this because national championship game, Kenyon Drake on the 5-yard line, he caught that ball, and his first step forward, probably everyone's thought was, what the hell are you doing? And then, because I was at that game because it was in Arizona, and I was sitting in the end zone where he dove in. And so it's like the dichotomy of emotions, right? It's like, what are you doing? It's on the 5-yard line. And then all of a sudden he's, you know, diving into the end zone. But no, you're right, Dave.
Yeah.
Today's world, don't risk it. Go to the 25 and call your first play.
Yep.
It is a risk-based decision.
It is, right? And so if you always take it at the 25,
never run back.
It becomes a little bit more sort of art than science, right? And so I think as a rule, let's take it at the 25, right? But if the guy back there sees the field and you're calling a coverage or whatever, if there's something you've seen on film, then let's take our shots. But as a rule, let's not get tackled on the 15, you know, let's just not do that. But no, I was at that game too. My wife and I were, and we were sort of catty corner in that end zone. So we probably sat close to you, Charlie.
And now he's playing for the Cardinals, so I get to watch him every day.
Absolutely.
He's hung in there pro-wise, he's had a decent pro career.
The biggest thing with Kenyon Drake, I was always a fan. He was always electric when he came in. And the thing that always sort of was frustrating is he would end up in Saban's doghouse. And there was a game, and I can't remember who it was, but it was one of those Sisters of Mercy teams. And he had done something, and who knows what he had done. And it was a game where he would have gotten 15 or 18 carries. And he got himself, you know, suspended for that game. And I remember, like, dude, this is your chance to put up 160-yard day, you know, against these guys. And you know, he wasn't able to play. Fortunately, he worked himself out of the doghouse because Saban put him in some very trusted spots. And he was a guy that's like, man, he's going to go pro because and have a sensational pro career because he was never like the guy at Alabama. And when he had chances to really burst out, especially early in his career, he would always kind of get in trouble. And so he was kind of working against himself. And it's amazing to see what he's doing in the NFL. He is an incredible talent.
Yeah, that game, Dave, you're talking about, we actually had a linebacker take the lion's share of the carries in the second half, Brent Callaway.
There you go.
If you remember, he was like a high school running back. He wasn't even on the depth chart, but he got all the carries. It's like, dude, this is on a platter for you. So, yeah, I totally remember.
Yeah, exactly right. And so it's not like another running back took it, but we had to move. Yeah. So every carry that Brent Callaway had, you know, it is 1.5 carries that Drake would have gotten.
Well, who are the running backs at that time? Who was the running back stable at that time?
Oh.
I feel like that wasn't that kind of Alti, Tenpenny, Tyron Jones, Drake territory maybe?
I think it was. You know, Derrick Henry was on that team. I can't remember like the early years. Would that still have been Lacy maybe?
Eddie Lacy and Derrick Henry had 1 year of overlap.
Did they? Okay. And then I know that that Henry and Kenyon had some overlap. So I don't know. I'd have to go back and look that up. But man,
okay,
think about these running back names.
Call on Caleb pulling out the linebacker as a running back.
Yeah, yeah.
See, I've been trained by Dave and Tom to look for those, you know, six stringers coming in. I told you when it's 45-0, and like, who is 21? He's not even. Where is he on this on this running back chart? Oh wait, he's not. Yeah, but Dave, I had another quick special teams question for you. Then I got to jump, but I feel like on kickoffs, it's difficult. I feel like under Saban to evaluate whether or not we're even trying to kick it out of the end zone, and I feel as if he's trying to build an advantage by kicking it short, trusting our coverage teams there. And I feel like over time, our opponents have just taken the 25-yard line when they're catching it on the 7 or 8. So I could be reading too much into it, but almost feels like strategically we're placing these short kicks to bait our opponents to run it out. But I could be wrong on that because it's difficult to evaluate those kickers. So just curious what you think.
Well, I think you're right. And I think that you know, and far be it for me to – challenge, you know, Saban's strategy. I think his strategy is probably a little out of date. And here's what I mean by that. It wasn't that long ago that the fair catch inside the 20 or 25, whatever the yard line is, it wasn't that long ago that that rule was introduced. And so it used to be the fair catch had to be in on a kickoff. It had to be in the end zone or, you know, you were down where you caught it. And so we used to sort of corner kick it, trying to get it inside the 5-yard line and then kick it into a corner. So all the convergence of the defenders was in one area as across, you know, as opposed to sort of everywhere. And so the strategy was, you know, corner kick it and then cover the hell out of it. And we're going to take yards off their plate because they are going to get the ball at the 18 instead of the 20 or the 15 or the 12 or, the, you know, whatever it is. Right. And we had some headhunters, you know, Reuben Foster on special teams. I mean, we had some headhunters that would go, you know, lay some wood and sort of enforce that theory. So, but the rule changed. And so anywhere inside the 20 or 25, whatever it is, you can fair catch it and get the ball at the 25. So I think that unplugged the strength of that theory. I think the coverage technique is still, you know, kick in the corner and get after them. Maybe you bait them to run. And so I think there's still value to the strategy, but not near as much as there was before the rule change.
Gotcha. Yeah, that makes sense. Well, guys, I got to drop. It's been a pleasure, though. Hopefully I can hop on next week and roll tide.
Absolutely. Thanks, Caleb. Roll tide.
Yeah, no,
roll tide.
You guys tell
so
me.
How you think like, Kellen,
sorry, go,
so
ahead,
how,
go ahead.
How do you think Kellen Mond will react to our defense this, today?
Kellen.
What is Kellen, it? His seventh year, isn't it?
It feels like it, right? Have we ever I'm, you know, at risk of sounding like I'm bagging on the guy. Have we ever seen a guy not develop?
Yeah.
You know, as a
Jalen Hurts.
Well, we actually did see some development from him.
Eventually,
but,
you know, eventually, yeah, yeah.
Not as much as, yeah. He's an interesting story. You know, Mond is, you know, I remember him as a freshman, like, oh, dude, this guy's going to be good. And then as a sophomore, oh, yeah, you know, he's going to – and then, like you said, he feels like he's been there forever. So last year, I remember thinking that was his last year. And I remember thinking, man, that kid, he feels like he needed just one more year. And so turns out, you know, he gets it. I don't know if you guys heard the Texas A&M show where I had my buddy Chad, you know, coming on and talking about it. And he had a real funny line, which I think is probably true. He said that Kellen Mond, his passing accuracy percentage goes up 5% a quarter. And that he plays better when he gets hit. He plays better when he runs and, you know, and all of those things. And we even kidded, you know, before we started recording that, he said, we need to run like a simulated game in the locker room or something. So he comes out thinking it's the second quarter. And I thought that was pretty clever. But I don't know. Mond is going to be one of those things. It'd be interesting. We're going to get after him. I think what would be interesting is if we try to keep him in the pocket and contain him so he can't run. But don't act, you know, I mean, you want to tackle quarterback anytime you can, but if we take away the running lanes and force him to beat his passing, I don't think he'll be able to. So, but yeah, he's a frustrating. I mean, I'm not even a Texas A&M fan, and he frustrates the hell out of me because you'd expect, like, come on, you know, you should be better.
Well, plus they got a lot of tough games this year, Texas A&M does.
Yeah.
I mean, holy shit. That draw.
And the roster of teams that they had coming to. You know, they were playing Abilene Christian and I think a Fresno State and somebody, I can't remember, but man, they lost some games. I don't know if you guys watch the SEC shorts. Sometimes they do pretty funny stuff, and they had a really funny thing about Texas A&M and their schedule. So it was kind of cool.
Yeah.
I don't know what Zoom is going to do. We're definitely over the 40 minutes, and they haven't kicked us off yet. So, if you guys want to wrap it, then that's cool. Yeah. If you want to talk some more, then that's cool too.
But you've taken an hour of your morning. You got a lot of stuff to prep for, and so this has been good.
Fantastic.
I enjoyed it. Thoroughly enjoyed it.
Fantastic. I hope that we can sort of ease into a pattern that's going to work for everyone. And Charlie, I just have to say this because you might not be in your garage next time you do this show. I am mesmerized by that hammer over your shoulder because I swear we had that same hammer when I was a kid growing up. Is that a Sears Craftsman hammer?
Yeah, that's an old hammer. I got all kinds of shit up here.
Man,
I got all my flags and.
Yep. Nice.
That flag with the stripes and the stars, that's not a Soviet flag. It's the Washington D.C. District of Columbia flag.
Ah, okay, okay.
It's not a communist. I put it out.
A communist.
I got a flag holder and I swap flags. So I put Nebraska. I put Alabama on game day and then Nebraska if they play and Alabama's not.
Yep.
And then I put some other. I got the Minnesota flag over there.
Nice.
And then when I put the flag with the three red stars and the stripes, all my neighbors think it's Ukraine or something. I'm like, come on, I'm just a guy from Minnesota.
Right.
But anyhow, thanks for pulling this together. Nice to meet.
Absolutely.
You know, Travis and everyone else.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it was good to meet you guys.
Absolutely.
Appreciate this.
Absolutely. Well, we'll take care. You guys take care. And man, just flattering. It really is. And appreciate meeting you guys in person kind of here over the Zoom. And look forward to doing more of these. As the season goes on, we'll have more fun stuff to talk about as the season sort of unfolds. So you guys take it easy and cheer for the Tide today.
All right.
Roll Tide.
All right.
Roll Tide, everyone.